Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us. Hawaii Talks on The Conversation. It's Aloha Friday, June 12th. Today we take the show on the road, broadcasting live from the Aloha Tower Marketplace. Here we get the view of Honolulu Harbor. And this morning we take a closer look at the cruise industry. It took a hit during the COVID pandemic shutdown, and 2026 was looking like it was going to be a solid year, possibly approaching pre-pandemic numbers. But that was before the U.S. declared war on Iran and fuel costs skyrocketed. It's also been about 2 months since lawyers went to court over the state's proposed green fee to help offset the costs of visitors to the islands. We hear from passengers about what they think about an added tax to their cruise to the Hawaiian Islands. And state lawmakers were asked to pass a law to backstop the green fee. They didn't. Tune to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. This morning, we're broadcasting live from the Aloha Tower Marketplace. Mahalo to Hawaii Pacific University for allowing us to use their esports arena. From the marketplace, we can see the cruise ships sail into Honolulu Harbor. Cruise ship visitors have been part of Hawaii's tourism picture for more than 150 years. And the latest visitor report shows that cruise passengers are up over the last year. But the cruise business is just part of the snapshot of the harbor. Joining us live is Deputy Director of our State Harbors Department, Dre Kalili. Good morning.
Good morning. Aloha. Thank you so much for having us here and for coming to the harbor this morning.
Oh, gosh. I'd love to come down here. And, you know, this is a big year because Aloha Tower marks its centennial.
The centennial anniversary. That's correct. This fall. We look forward to that.
Yeah. And, you know, we also have all the construction happening down at the Kapalama Terminal. And we've got rail. We're just outside the door here.
Certainly, there's so much happening around Honolulu Harbor as well as across our commercial ports statewide.
Yeah, so how does all the work that's happening in the harbor affect the cruise industry?
That is such a great question. So there's a lot of work that happens that benefits every user of our harbor, whether it's a cargo operation or a cruise ship and the passenger operations. And so constantly, year over year, in every one of our ports, we are concerned about dredging to make sure the ships can come in safely, that the piers are in great condition for whether it's passengers walking over them or our longshoremen, you know, discharging cargo from the ships onto our cargo terminals. And so our job at the Department of Transportation is to make sure that we are maintaining our facilities in great working order so that the private users of our ports can do all the things that they need to do to support our local economy.
And then we went out with you down to the Kapalama Terminal, and I know construction's just, you know, happening fast and furious over there. How does the move, because Peisha, I think, will go down in that location, and Matson will be able to kind of have a little bit more wiggle room.
Yes. So the whole reason that we are building the Kapalama Container Terminal is to add about 84 acres of new cargo space and 1,800 feet of new berth space. And like you said, it gives everyone a little bit more elbow room. The more space we have, the more efficient our cargo movements can be. And so we're looking at finishing construction at the end of this calendar year. And then we'll start to see a lot of shifts happening around Honolulu Harbor. And the biggest shift is going to be, you know, as you mentioned, Peisha Hawaii is going to relocate its operations from San Island Container Terminal across the way to the brand new Kapalama Container Terminal. But there are going to be some other shifts. So some operations that Peisha and Hawaii Stevedores are running at Pier 1 are also going to relocate to KCT. Pier 1 is right next to our primary cruise terminal at Pier 2, next to the foreign trade zone. And if you're not familiar with our pier numbering, it's right across the street from Restaurant Row, or Waterfront Plaza, mm-hmm. I think is the current name. And what that means is we might be able to look at hosting two ships at a time at the Piers 1 and 2 facility. So that could be a very big change for our cruise passenger operations. And then, you know, the other facility is right near where we are right now at Piers 10 and 11. That was the primary arrival point for a lot of passengers, I think going back to at least the 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where boat days
happen.
Boat
days, yes, absolutely.
And so our terminal is inches, it feels like, away from the construction of the Skyline Guideway. And so right now we're trying to work diligently with HART to balance, you know, their needs for the construction, but also with the cruise passenger operations when ships arrive at Piers 10 and 11. So we're trying to make everything work, giving everyone a little bit more elbow room, not just for cargo operations, but for cruise also. But as you mentioned, there is a lot happening in Honolulu Harbor.
Yeah, and as the passengers disembark, you want to keep them safe if they're trying to make their way down to Chinatown or wherever. And with all the construction and, you know, the tour buses, right? You've got to be able to coordinate all that.
Right. So it's a little, we're finding a little bit of a pinch point around the Pier 10 and 11, and that's around Fort Street and Nimitz and Bishop Street and that complex between those roadways. And so it would be a huge improvement, I think, if we could configure two ships at a time at Piers 1 and 2. But of course, like I said, that's all contingent on us finishing at Kapalama.
Right. And, you know, I know they're forecasting more storms and, you know, you folks have to manage the harbor with ships and vessels that need to come in when they're close and they need to unload their cargo or head on back out to sea.
So we are about 2 weeks into the hurricane season. It's every year from June to November. I'll take this opportunity to put the plug in. Everyone get ready for hurricane season. I think for us at the ports, it's critically important that we are in great communication with our users and everyone knows the cues, right? Well, we start watching when storms develop and then when they cross that 140 degree line. We are grateful for our excellent partnership with the United States Coast Guard. And as those storms approach, we are working with them and in constant communication with their teams to make sure we're all clear on what conditions we should expect to see. And then if we need to plan for a port closure, right? And then we'll start to take the steps to do that. And then once the storm passes, there's the protocols we follow to reopen our ports. But really, communication is everything as we plan for any number of heavy weather and storms. And even like last summer, we had that tsunami warning. And so that's what we do leading up to, you know, every year's hurricane season. But we have a lot of longer term planning and other efforts and initiatives in place to make sure that our ports are incredibly resilient and we can bounce back from any disruption or impact from, you know, a storm or other type of event. And so, you know, we are studying the effects of erosion and changing sea conditions and tides and the wave energy changes over time. And so we're pretty, I think, on a good course to ensuring we understand what to expect and how we need to redesign our piers and port facilities to, again, ensure that we are resilient.
Yes, and, you know, we had those Kona lows and there was bad weather. I think it was on the Big Island. A ship, you know, bypassed that, came here, I think, instead. And so, yeah, you've got to be flexible.
Yes, flexible and nimble. And, you know, we try our best to accommodate when there is an unexpected change in schedule for any type of ship. But, you know, ship agents work with our harbor masters and their staff. And, you know, we do what we can to continue to support vessel operations and just the overall maritime industry.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of plates spinning in the air at all times.
I feel like it's a whole pantry full of plates. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're able to do it because of the great partnerships we have with private industry, with our other government agencies like the Coast Guard and Army Corps of Engineers, and then other state agencies, including HAIMA and many, many others.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we could get into how the cruise ship industry works on the neighbor islands, but we do have to take a break. We have been hearing from Deputy Director, Harbors Director Dave Khalili this morning. We are broadcasting live from the Aloha Tower Marketplace, and we will be right back after a short pause. Thank you.
Support for HPR comes from Blue Note Hawaii. Contemporary jazz saxophonist Dave Koz performs June 16th to the 18th with songs such as Careless Whisper and Together Again. Tickets at BlueNoteHawaii.com.
A well-crafted will or estate plan speaks volumes about your hopes and dreams for the future. It's also a reflection of your ideals and the organizations you value most. We at HPR would be honored to share in your legacy with a planned gift. Including HPR in your estate plan ensures that quality public radio is here for future generations. To learn more, visit hawaiipublicradio.org/legacy.
Support for HPR comes from the Honolulu Museum of Art. Doris Duke Theater's exhibition on screen series in June features the artists Frida Kahlo, Constable and Turner, and Caravaggio. HonoluluMuseum.org.
Welcome back. We are broadcasting live from Aloha Tower Marketplace this morning, and we're joined by Deputy Harbors Director Dre Khalili. Dre, you know, talk about the impact of the cruise industry on the neighbor islands, because we are just coming off the peak season.
Yes. So peak season for us is, it usually starts about September and then goes through April and May. And on the neighbor islands, right, I know we've talked a lot about Honolulu Harbor already, but for the neighbor islands, you know, they see about as much of activity as we do here on Oahu. And especially since the Lahaina fires, the Lahaina anchorage is out of commission for the foreseeable future. And so a lot of the cruise ships that called there regularly with their itineraries have had to rearrange them. And, you know, now we'll see some cruise ships maybe spending 2 days at Nawiliwili on Kauai or at other ports to kind of fill that gap that was created when, you know, the Lahaina fires occurred. And so there's, you know, we're seeing a growth of activity, but I think this is true for Honolulu as well as our neighbor islands. We see the ships growing, but maybe our facilities aren't growing to keep up with the growing ships and, of course, the growing number of passengers. And I think one thing that we see on the neighbor islands is more often than not, we're going to see a cruise ship come in and their passengers will be there for the day or maybe overnight. And then they'll get back on and then they'll carry on to the next port of call. Whereas here at Honolulu, sometimes we'll see a 4,000 passenger ship, you know, all the passengers get off with all their luggage and then a whole new batch of passengers. And so I think when we talked about elbow room a little earlier, we're looking at how do we create that for our cruise operations and to make sure all the passengers, they have a good, comfortable, and, of course, safe experience when they're here in our islands.
Yeah, because these cruise ships, you know, they're getting bigger. And I know they've got a schedule of ships already being built, right?
That's right.
With a running, I guess, cleaner energy, with cleaner fuel. But, yeah, you wonder about, okay, can our harbors handle?
Right. So we are trying to figure that out. What can we do? I think some of the areas where our cruise passenger facilities are kind of the space is finite there with some very few exceptions, but we have quite a bit of work happening, especially like at our Hilo port and Kahului, where we're in the middle of a land acquisition process in both places and having a little bit more land. And we can spread out some of our cargo operations, but also separate our cruise operations, especially where, you know, taxis and motor coaches come to pick up the passengers. If we can separate that from the cargo areas, it'll be, again, that nice, comfortable, safe experience for passengers. So there's quite a bit of work happening, construction, land acquisitions, planning, design. There is a lot going on in our port system.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole idea of emissions and curbing emissions and, you know, going towards cleaner energy, I know that your boss, Ed Sniffen, you know, had talked about when we might have to figure something out maybe put a ceiling, a cap on the number of cruise ships that come here, right? And you folks are tracking the emissions part of that.
So last year we developed a plan about how for across all modes in the Department of Transportation, we're going to aim to reduce our emissions and our carbon footprint. And for the ports, we had considered, okay, for cruise, like, what does that look like? Because as you noted, there are some newer ships being built with different fuel types and fuels with fewer emissions, but we're not seeing those come here. And so we've been in an active discussion with the industry about what the solutions could be. But I'll point out, we got a grant from the EPA to do an emissions study of what is actually happening in our ports. And I think in a couple of weeks, we'll be publishing our findings. And then with that effort, we're going to be identifying some real strategies that can bring down the emissions, not just from cruise, but, you know, for cargo also. So I'm excited about what the next couple months are going to reveal in terms of data and a pathway to reduce those emissions.
Is there anything else you want to underscore just about, you know, the harbor activity across the state and, you know, where we want this to go?
You know, just in general, I think most members of the public, you know, they touch and feel a highway almost daily. And, you know, on a very regular basis, you know, if you're flying out to a neighbor island or to the continent, you know, you experience our airports, but very rarely do our community members get to touch and feel our ports in that same way. And so I think, you know, this is a great opportunity to just share like a little bit about what happens on our waterfront. And one thing I'd like to kind of come around to is you noted earlier that we're celebrating the centennial for Aloha Tower. And I think in the fall, once we reopen the tower and the observation deck, we really want the public to come down and appreciate the tower for, you know, what it is. It's this beautiful landmark. You have this beautiful view of our harbor. And I really want people to experience our ports as best they can, especially from the tower.
Yeah, because it's a rich history. You know,
it's incredibly rich,
and there is lots to celebrate. Hopefully you'll let us know on what's planned.
If you take a look right now, you can see they're painting the tower, and so it's just a matter of weeks before we'll announce the date for the official centennial celebration.
Okay, and I know you folks were talking about Falls of Clyde and somehow working pieces of that historic
ship. When we reopen the tower, we'll see a display of artifacts from the ship, and, you know, the public can celebrate that rich history also.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much, Dre. We've been talking to Deputy Harbors Director Dre Khalili. We've been discussing the cruise industry and the impact on our harbors.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, offering a Master of Accounting program. Learn more at scheidler.hawaii.edu.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, the Book of Mormon is celebrating its 15th year on Broadway. We talk with the two original stars, Andrew Rannells and Josh Gad. We'll also hear from Clark Peters. In the series The Wire, he played police detective Lester Freeman. In Spike Lee's To Five Bloods, he was a Vietnam vet. He co-stars in the new series, The Burrows. Join us.
Beginning Sunday at noon.
Support for HPR comes from Costco Air Conditioning and Refrigeration, featuring Daikin Air Conditioning Systems. Listing of contractors installing Daikin products, that's Daikin, at CostcoHawaii.com.
This morning, we are live at the Aloha Tower Marketplace, which looks out over Honolulu Harbor. It's where cruise ships slip in and out of port. Shannon McKee has been tracking cruise activity for some 3 decades. She's president of Access Cruise, the company the state has hired to keep its finger on the pulse of the industry. McKee tracks trends and looks at what could impact this aspect of the visitor snapshot.
The cruise industry with 2026 was looking very solid for Hawaii. This is all based on forecasted numbers that come out and are uploaded into a system called hawaii.portcall.com. So we download the data that's in there, which is placed in there by the different port agencies that support the cruise lines when they come in. They're not actual numbers, but they do give us a snapshot of what we should be seeing for the year. 2026 was certainly looking to be, you know, an excellent year. I think a lot like MICE and the convention business, it can be cyclical when it comes to, we'll see little dips every other year just because we see the world cruises that come through. There's usually smaller ships, but sometimes that will contribute if we see a little bit of a downturn, never anything that's too significant, but we'll see the world cruises come in every other year versus every year to Hawaii for certain. But overall, 2026 looked to be a very good year when we sat down and like I said, just pulled the numbers from HawaiiPortCall.com.
Yes, and the industry took such a hit when we saw the pandemic unfold. And I know we're grappling with cases of the hantavirus, and looks like that's been contained. But still, it's just a worry because given our experience during COVID, you know, how bad it could get.
Well, I think it's a little bit misleading with the hantavirus, of course, in the media and what they're sharing. I mean, the virus obviously started in South America and Argentina with a couple that had been on a bird-watching ship, and they were on an expedition vessel that spent extensive time at sea through this expedition. So, sadly, that bit of information around the hantavirus, it was a lot of sensationalism built around that. The cruise lines certainly have dealt with over the years their fair share of viruses. Obviously, norovirus is fairly common in the trades, which is just a stomach bug that when it gets on board, the cruise lines have protocols and procedures that they immediately implement if they see somebody's brought that on board and they see any kind of spread, which increases the number of cleanings they do, and they put special protocols in, you know, certain pieces. They're cleaning the hand railings. They're handing out the silverware. They're making sure everybody's washing their hands. So the cruise lines have a lot of great procedures in place, especially when they see the bugs that sometimes come on board. But I think that the hantavirus was an anomaly. It was certainly sensationalized in the news, but it's not something in my 30 plus years that I've ever seen on board a ship before.
We also have the situation in Iran and the concern about the fuel costs, but cruise ships book these trips so far in advance, and I know they have hedged some of the costs in with the price of oil.
They certainly do, and the cruise lines are certainly flexible. We are seeing across, everybody is paying very close attention to fuel costs and how that's going to affect the industry. I know that there has been people out there that have speculated that the cruise lines will implement some type of fuel charge in the future if it continues, but we haven't seen that from any of the major brands. I think at this point in time, it's still a wait and see when it comes to the fuel costs. The cruise lines are certainly looking at all of their costs across the board. And essentially, with the fuel costs as they are, it touches everything with the delivery of their goods and services that are being delivered around the world. As the ships move, fuel certainly has a huge impact on their profitability.
Talk about the fact that with the cruise ships, and I know our numbers have been up, but, you know, when you think of these are visitors that you can count on, right? I was thinking like it's a safe bet, right? It's like bonds on the stock market because they plan so far ahead.
Yeah, with the cruise lines, they certainly do, especially the major brands, your Carnival Corporations, your Royal Caribbean Groups, your Norwegian Cruise Line. Obviously, Norwegian Cruise Line is the biggest partner in Hawaii They have a dedicated vessel to Hawaii. But the cruise lines are watching, and they're booking and really scheduling out anywhere from 3 to 5 years. And when I say 3 to 5 years out, they'll have their itineraries pretty much in place 3 years out. 5 years out, they'll have generalized regions that they want to put their ships before they put the actual itineraries in. But a lot of the way that they look at their itinerary planning, it is based on demand of a destination. And fortunate or unfortunate for destinations, if we see a downturn in popularity of a destination, the cruise lines have the ability to move those vessels. And at times they do, because if they can't fill the vessels, then they're going to move them to a place that they can. And we see that they don't like to do that once they publish an itinerary. Most cruise lines will do their best to stick to the itineraries that have been published, but at times they will make those adjustments if they see that they put an itinerary on sale 2 years out and they're not seeing the lift and the pickup at the price points that they need. They will make those adjustments and change those itineraries around. So I can't say that we can always depend on them. They are always watching. But the cruise lines, their business model is to fill those ships, especially the contemporary brands, your Royal Caribbean, your Carnival, your Norwegian Cruise Line, is to fill the ships. The goal is to have those cabins filled. It is a very different model than what you find with the hoteliers. The hoteliers may want capacity at 92%. The cruise lines, you'll often see them say that their capacity was over 100%, and it's because it's filling every single berth. So if you have a cabin that will take four, it's about what that capacity is to fill all four people into that berth. And that's an important piece. So they're always looking at whatever it takes to fill those beds and fill those cabins on board the ships. And they've done a great job of it. So I think it's certainly a different model. We don't see cruise lines pulling out quickly in most cases. They will stick to their strategy, but we can see their strategies. We're watching their strategies years in advance.
And you know what? I know just with our recent problems with the back-to-back storms here, I believe there were some diversions. A ship may have pulled into another port just to avoid the bad weather. They were able to rearrange, a bit unsettling for the vendors in Hilo or in an area where they rely on the activity of the cruise lines. But yeah, there's some flexibility in there. Bad weather happens.
Yeah, the cruise lines are certainly used to doing that. And that's the first thing they'll do with the Kona load storms. I'm sure that the cruise brands look to see what other islands had availability if they could move the vessel to another island. Obviously, they do not want to disappoint their guests. So if they can rearrange their schedule while they're in the Hawaiian Islands, they will make their best effort to make that happen.
And then you talked about hotel rooms, and I know we're all waiting for a decision on the green fee because of that concern about attaching an additional cost for cruise passengers. And the ones we talked to, some didn't mind paying an extra fee because they said some of these ports could use some help. But of course, then for others, it's the price point.
Of course. It's really hard to speak to that because I think that there's an active lawsuit out there. And so there's still a lot of uncertainty around anything around the green fees as it is concerned with the cruise line. So it's not really something I can speak to.
Yeah, but it's just another aspect out there in play. There's also some talk by the state to possibly limit the number of cruise ships that stop in Hawaii, you know, with the concern about emissions and whether the cruise line is moving fast enough for the state on improving the efficiency, fuel efficiency of its vessels. And that's another thing that's out there that's still at play.
You know, the cruise industry, I have to say, is very progressive, and they're working with the new vessels that are scheduled to come out, that are being built. They all have been outfitted with the latest and greatest with any of the sustainability initiatives, from being able to plug into shore power to being able to take on green fuels, whatever that may be, whether it be LNG, hydrogen fuels. Some of them have dual tanks. So the cruise industry is actually working very quickly. They have, through Cruise Line International Association, they have a goal to have the industry be zero emissions by 2050. So I feel that they're moving in the right direction. And certainly there are some legacy vessels that are still out there on the high seas. But the cruise lines are moving very quickly to reach their targets. But yes, the state has targets in place also. They're not necessarily aligned with other destinations around the world or the Cruise Line International Association. I know there are talks going on across the board as far as how they can become more aligned, but that's probably a conversation that's more suited towards the Department of Transportation. I know they have been working very closely with the industry as a whole to see where that comes together and what the initiatives will be between the industry as a whole and Hawaii as a state.
Anything else that you think would be important to underscore, you know, just as we navigate through some of these issues that are beyond our control?
You know, I think it's important for everybody to understand that the cruise industry plays an important vertical for tourism in Hawaii overall. They have traditionally been some of the first responders when we've had some kind of crisis, when we had the volcano in 2018 and people were leaving the islands, the cruise ships were the first ones to return. They respected and said, oh, we can come back, or we didn't need to leave. Same thing with the fires in Maui. As soon as they were given the go-ahead and they felt that it was a respectful time and Maui said yes, they were the first ones back. So I think that the cruise lines are great, can be great partners. They are great partners to destinations. I think that's what the other piece is, as we hear around tourism. Cruise tourism is managed tourism. We know when the ships are coming. We know that they're coming years in advance. We can see it on our schedules, which I think is really helpful when it comes to planning. The guests, when they come, many of them are on organized types of programs, and these tour programs, when they're coming off, their footprint is much smaller, which I know is very important to the community, and they support the entrepreneurs. They support the local providers that are there. There are so many stories I can share of small providers that became big providers because of the cruise ships, because of that, the fact that the Pride of America comes into a port once a week, they can start a business off of that and then grow the business into the hotels and everywhere, but they know that ship is going to be there once a week. So I think that there's so many important pieces around the cruise ships, and that what a valuable asset they are as a part of one of the verticals that comes to Hawaii. The other piece is that allows guests to sample Hawaii. And what we find is that those guests return, and they return to their favorite island, whatever that island may be that they found that was their favorite. It was just a sampling of the Hawaiian Islands, and the Hawaiian Islands have so much to offer. And every island, as we know, is so different and it has a different personality. And so I love that piece about the cruise tourism in building that managed tourism, which Hawaii talks about all the time.
That was Shannon McKee of Access Cruise with a snapshot of the cruise ship industry here in the islands, how it's recovered from the pandemic shutdown, and how we're all watching the latest global events to see how we can navigate through the second half of 2026. You're back with the conversation as we broadcast live from the Aloha Tower Marketplace. We were able to talk with a number of passengers who disembarked here in Honolulu at Pier 10 recently about how they were feeling about paying an additional fee for cruising in our waters.
Hello, my name is John, and I'm a passenger on the Noordam ship, which came in under Holland America's flag, and we are here to visit Honolulu. Now, when you ask me the question of would an increased tax cause me to consider different options for where I visited? The answer is certainly yes. I have a limited amount of money. I'm very selective in where I go. And if the price got too high, I might choose to go to Alaska rather than to Hawaii, and that would be a loss for Hawaii and a gain for Alaska. I think that that ought to be very much so in the equation of how you address this thing, because people do have options and they would love to come see this nation and this island, but they have limited amounts of resources and we have to make those choices.
And of the places that you've been to, have you seen the impact of cruise ships coming into port?
Yes, there are numerous places around the world where I've been where there have been multiple cruise ships in there. And when you put a third ship in there, all of a sudden it becomes an unusable location for most of the people. And so making sure that you're in the price right bracket where you can get enough people but not too many is very important to this. And more importantly, you already have beautiful weather, beautiful ocean, beautiful buildings, beautiful history. Market those things.
Okay, but think carefully about this green fee.
Yes, I would have to think very carefully about this, because until you've done a very careful study of multiple ports and multiple places that you can you're competing with, you can't just say, well, we'll just tax the people, because taxation without a good reason is not something that people are going to embrace, shall I say.
Okay, but you figure there's a tipping point for passengers, and at some point, if it's too high, they'll go elsewhere.
Absolutely right. I mean, I made this choice on this particular voyage, and I started down in New Zealand, and I'll end up in Alaska, because they had a very reasonable schedule of costs, and it took me to places that I had never seen before. For example, all of the French Polynesian islands when we came up here. And they weren't running any big taxes, but they had two things that were exceptional. They had exceptional things in history, and they didn't have other people coming there because it was very affordable.
And you enjoyed yourself in those places?
They were absolutely awesome. It's nice to be back in the United States. It's nice to be with my countrymen. And I think I got a very good deal coming here, but if it had been higher, I probably would have not chosen that. I would have chosen someplace else.
We also talked to Russell and Esther James from Lubbock, Texas, to get their thoughts about paying an additional fee.
Actually, no complaints. I mean, we want to be helpful to the places we visit. They're beautiful, and given the cost of the cruise, it's so minor. Not going to be a deterrent for us, and if it's helpful to the places we visit, then why not?
And have you been to places where the ports of call maybe could have used some help financially?
Yes, we've been to quite a few different places that were like that, that we said maybe need some help financially.
And so you would have no objection of a fee?
No, not at all.
Have you been to places where you've seen the impact of a large ship unloading passengers and having maybe a negative effect on the place you're visiting?
Most of the places that we go are very used to the cruise passengers, so there's sort of an industry that's been built up around it. It's relatively rare that you will take a cruise ship to a place that's not used to the volume of cruise ship passengers. And so then it just gets into the larger issues of tourism. How much do you want? What is the impact of tourism? It's a very easy kind of knob to turn off or turn on when it comes to the cruise passengers as compared to other forms of tourism.
And so I'm just curious, what activities did you folks partake in while you're here in port?
We did an excursion, and we did the Hawaii Luau, and we did
Honolulu Museum of Art. We just got back from that, and I'd like to try the foods and see the art and see the parks, that sort of thing, and so whatever's there.
Okay, all right, but you wouldn't mind paying a fee?
Relative to the cost of doing this trip, especially Hawaii, Hawaii is a long trip. So these are expensive cruises. So the kind of fees that are being discussed are just a tiny fraction of the overall cost of the trip. It's not a deterrent.
We also talked to David Simard, who says he understands why some ports are pushing back.
And so what do you think about this notion of a green fee for Hawaii?
Well, it would depend on how much and so on. You know, I recognize that sometimes cruise ships can overburden a port city, but you know, it's all a matter of how much and what's the value for what the price is.
What seems fair to you?
Well, I would say maybe somewhere $5 to $10 a passenger would be reasonable.
Okay. As far as other places that you may have visited, do they charge fees like that?
Not that I know of. I mean, a visa fee is something totally different than a fee just to step off a ship and visit a port.
Well, here in Hawaii, we charge a hotel room tax, but obviously because you're on a ship, it's a little bit different.
Right.
But just was curious to see, what folks who take these trips think about. We may be the first in the country to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, but understandable why ports may want to do that.
Have you been to any ports where you've seen a large impact, environmentally?
With cruise ships? Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Venice, Amsterdam, all of those cities have actually put restrictions on cruise ships now. And I think Barcelona is another one. But I don't know how many ships Honolulu or Hawaii gets a year, but I know those ports get a lot of cruise ships during
the
season.
And the restrictions you talk about, but fewer ships visiting?
Right, right.
And here's Charlie Squires.
So what do you think of this notion of a green fee for cruise ship passengers?
I think it's fine. I think they've done a great job in New Zealand with charging an environmental impact fee for everybody who comes in. And so I fully support it.
And so I know that there are some folks who feel that it's not fair, it's not a hotel room tax like we charge now most visitors. But you think it's a fair thing to ask?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then have you been to many ports of call?
Yes, across the South Pacific and in other places in the world. And so I support anything that supports the environment.
Those were the voices of a number of passengers disembarking here in Honolulu recently, talking about how they feel about the green fee and its additional tax for cruise passengers.
This is Ira Glass. On This American Life, sometimes we just show up somewhere, turn on our tape recorders, and see what happens.
If you can't get 7 cars in 12 days, you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, holy, what, are you kidding me?
Like at this car dealership, trying to sell its monthly quota of cars, and it is not going well.
I just don't want one balloon to a car. Balloon the whole freaking place so it looks like a circus.
Real life stories every week.
Beginning Saturday at noon.
Tune in to HPR2 this Sunday at 3 p.m. for the final concert in our Hawaii Symphony Orchestra Masterwork Series. Under the direction of Dane Lamb, we'll hear Overture No. 2 by Luis Ferrand, Symphony No. 1 by Brahms, and Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini by Sergei Rachmaninoff, featuring piano virtuoso Joyce Yang. That's this Sunday at 3 p.m. on HPR2, sponsored by the Rice Partnership.
It was almost 2 months ago that attorneys for the state and the cruise industry laid out their case on the legality of the green fee for cruise ships. We're still waiting on a decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel. Ben Snyder is the attorney for Cruise Lines International Association, or CLIA. He argued that federal laws, including the Tonnage Clause and the Rivers and Harbors Act, prohibit Hawaii from imposing undue fees on cruise ships and their passengers.
CLIA's members pay significant amounts of money every year for services that are actually provided to the vessels in Hawaii. We are not objecting to that. The RHA has an express exception for services that are tied to the reasonable cost of providing those services. The problem is that here, Hawaii has come in and decided to impose additional charges, tens of millions of dollars every year, that have nothing to do with the services that CLIA's members were already providing. Those taxes are to support general revenue and to go to climate change projects and beautification projects, things like that, that are just far afield from the sorts of fees that Congress allowed under the RHA and that the Supreme Court has said are permissible under the tonnage clause.
Andrew Tia is with the state's Department of Attorney General. He defended the green fee in light of other taxes that states levy on ships.
States across the country tax businesses and economic activity that happens on ships. To name a few, Alaska levies an income tax on shipping companies, including those domiciled out of state. Florida imposes a sales tax on the rental of boats. Texas collects a franchise tax from ships, apportioned by the number of days spent in Texas ports.
The state has not been collecting any green fee money from the cruise industry due to the ongoing litigation. A bill this past legislative session aimed to carve out a compromise and lessen the fee for cruise ships. But the measure died in conference committee. Adrian Tam chairs the House Tourism Committee and spoke with HPR's Maddie Bender about what lawmakers had hoped for and why it didn't happen.
Going into the session, we understand that the cruise industry has launched a lawsuit against the state over the green fee. And I think on both sides, both the state and the cruise ship sides, we want to avoid a very costly lawsuit. So we wanted to find some middle ground or a compromise. And that ultimately became the bill that was proposed, was a per passenger headcount of a $10 fee. And those $10 will go towards, you know, harbor improvements and several environmental protection costs in the area.
A statement that you made at one point over the course of the session got some attention because you said essentially it seemed to you that the state was reversing course on whether the initial green fee that was passed, not this session, but the previous one, was completely legal with respect to the cruise industry. Talk a little bit more about that.
So when we passed the original bill for the green fee to include cruise ships, we consulted with the Attorney General as well as our own attorneys, and they've cleared it all as legal. And that was pretty much the green light for us to move forward with it. And they also said that they were able to defend it.
And I mean, then what changed to put you and lawmakers in the position where you felt like you had to pass that per passenger fee?
I think what changed, I don't think anything changed actually. I think it was the fact that it was going to be a very lengthy lawsuit and a costly one. But at the end of the day, we understand the enormous economic benefits that our cruise ships bring, especially to places like Hilo and Oahu. And we wanted to find a middle ground compromise. And that was one of the reasons why I introduced the bill that would allow for cruise ship gaming within our waters, at least, but not on our ports.
Would you mind expanding a little bit on kind of this economic trade-off, if you will, of, you know, supporting tourism and the industry while also making it fair, being cognizant of something like the burden on the climate that cruise ships and the cruise industry causes?
I think it's something that we are all both on the same page on, which is we have to understand the need to protect Hawaii's environment because that is what attracts visitors. The cruise line industry is going to really have a hard time attracting customers if, you know, our natural environment continues to deteriorate and we continue to face natural disasters as we've seen with Kona Lows as well as the Lahaina wildfires. And there's also a need to balance our state's largest economy, which is tourism. Tourism employs a lot of folks in Hawaii, sustains a lot of small businesses. And many folks on these cruise ships, when they come here, they do support a lot of small businesses, especially, as I mentioned, in Hilo.
It's a tension that I think a lot of people are very familiar with. So the bill to tweak the green fee or the way it's collected on cruise ship passengers to $10 per head. That did not pass this session. Did that surprise you?
I wouldn't say I was surprised or nothing. I don't know why it didn't pass.
I wonder, though, do you feel like that bill not passing amounts to leaving money on the table, at least for this next year?
Yes. Because the bill didn't pass, the TET tax looks like it's going to stay and the lawsuit is going to continue.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a perspective on the lawsuit one way or another?
You know, at the end of the day, I want us to do what's best for our environment, but also do what's best for our economy, because those two go hand in hand. And it's up to us as the state to find a path forward with the cruise industry on how to find that right balance.
Is this something that you're going to keep as a priority in future sessions?
Yeah, I'll continue to work with the introducer and the subject matter chairs to see how we can find a path forward, as well as the governor's office, because they've worked really closely with us on this as well.
Thinking about the fact that the green fee has been something that the governor's office has pushed pretty strongly for, was heralded as this like huge success, first in the nation, when it did go into effect. And yet, when we look at the cruise industry, we're not collecting anything. Does that, to you, tamp down the success of the green fee a little bit? Or should it make us reassess how groundbreaking this is?
I think the green fee will have a lot of benefits for the state. We've already collected several millions of dollars off of it. And we are spending it on our natural environment. We are putting it in disaster mitigation. And the plus side for our visitor industry is that part of the green fee will also go towards sustainable tourism. I want to also emphasize how important it is that the green fee is providing funding for disaster mitigation, because it looks like we're heading into hurricane season during one of the busiest times for tourism. And one natural disaster could wipe out the economy. And that's why we had to pass this green fee. It also is beneficial for the residents of Hawaii, because as we continue to see insurance rates go up, insurance companies are looking for places that are willing to invest in disaster mitigation and to prevent these disasters, so they don't have to pay out a large portion of their own funds when a disaster hits.
That was State House Representative Adrian Tam discussing a scuttled plan to amend the transient accommodation tax for cruise ships. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is expected to issue a decision on the cruise industry's case at some point in the coming months. That is it for us for this Aloha Friday. We would like to thank Hawaii Pacific University for hosting us for today's On the Road show. Coming up next week, we take you to Chicago for a sneak peek of the new Obama Presidential Center. Hawaii Public Radio made the trip. We were curious to see what story would be told about Hawaii. It is, after all, where President Barack Obama was born and where he spent much of his childhood and what helped shape his path to the White House. Got feedback? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation shows on our website or as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. Our program is produced by Maddie Bender, Lillian Song, and Kevin Allen, with support from the HPR digital team. Mahalo to John DeMello for our backer theme quiz music, and Gypsy 808 for theme music. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us on Monday. Pick up the conversation.